You are all aware that there are some occasions in the Jewish year in which Jews are bidden to fast. The most well-known, of course, is Yom Kippur, probably right behind that Tisha B'Av, but there are other fasts in the Jewish calendar, Ta'anit Esther and others, Tzom Gedalia. What you may not know is that the tradition developed later on to do a word fast. A word fast is a day on which you do not speak, which I think, by the way, for most Jews is harder than a day on which you do not eat. Because at least when you're not eating, you can still express your opinion and disapprove of other people's opinions, which is one of our favorite pastimes. But it occurs to me every now and then, particularly when something controversial arises in the Jewish world, that I wish we could reinstitute, if not the word fast, then at least the opinion fast. And when something important and dramatic happens, I wish everybody would say, I'm not going to express an opinion for at least a week. Because actually, my instantaneous reaction might be uninformed or ill-informed. And so I'm going to listen and learn and study, and then I will express an opinion. By the way, this will never happen. But I do have that fantasy from time to time. And the reason that it won't happen in part is that there is this insatiable maw of news now on cable and on the internet, on Twitter, on Facebook, and social media that requires constant feeding. I know, I was told this when I first started to do Facebook and Twitter, that if I don't do it all the time, it's going to dry up and disappear. But that's okay because I don't only have to post political stuff. I can post quotations, religious stuff, things that I don't have to come up with on the basis of an event that happened yesterday about which I have to express a definitive opinion, but people whose job is politics, they have no choice. And when something happens in the Jewish world, most Jews think their job is politics. And I think nothing right now is more important or galvanizing in the Jewish world than the question of Iran and the deal that was made between the European powers, the United States, and Iran that holds for the next 6 months. And so the moment that word got out about the deal, like you, I was deluged. Not just my inbox, although that you could spend years just reading the articles that people sent me that I must read about the agreement, because this is actually the truth about it. But also on the media and every talk show, and all you have to do is turn into any of the talk shows tomorrow morning. Meet the Press, Face the Nation, Good Morning America, Good Night America, Good Afternoon America. It's halftime from the football game, America. They will all be talking about the deal from Iran, and everybody will be expressing a definitive opinion. So I thought to myself, is it my job to get up and express a definitive opinion about something that is complex, divisive, and incredibly important? Is that useful and is that helpful? I thought actually better that I should situate this agreement in Jewish history, because it actually has a place in Jewish history that is worth our thinking about and that actually does give us a certain program of action that we should be aware of. We are now in the midst of Hanukkah, and the rabbis like to pair off different holidays. And I want to pair Hanukkah with a holiday that is not usually paired with, and that is Purim. Because Hanukkah and Purim actually represent two diametrically opposed political situations of the Jewish people. Let's start with Purim. Remember the situation. That is, the Jewish people are a subject people, a minority, and a majority culture with no real political voice unless they are lucky enough to persuade the ruling powers, which in this case is the king, that he should favor what they want. This, by the way, is exactly the political situation we read about in the Torah this morning. The Jews are in the same situation. If Joseph doesn't appeal to the Pharaoh, then he has no political rights whatsoever. He's a subject people. And for much of Jewish history, as we know, that was essentially the position of the Jews. It was the stratagems of powerlessness that we had to rely on. Currying favor, making ourselves indispensable in business, in finance, in skills, in crafts, in some way trying to persuade people that we were worthwhile, because if the ruling regime soured on us, we could be gone tomorrow. So in Purim, we have the picture of Jewish powerlessness that is saved only by the strange goodwill of the king. And maybe that's why God's name is not mentioned in Megillat Esther. Because really, at the moment, we felt ourselves entirely subject to the whim of the ruling powers. Hanukkah represents the opposite. In the Hanukkah story, you have a small group of Jews who are sufficiently powerful to defeat the great power of the world at the time and to become sovereign for themselves. It's the exact opposite situation in some ways of the Purim story. Powerlessness and the ability to take power. What I want to suggest to you is that today we are situated between Hanukkah and Purim. We are not, thank God, powerless. Not only are we not powerless because of Israel, which is the principal reason, and the fact that it has an army and a thriving society, but we're not powerless because Jews in other countries have a voice as well. And yet, everyone here knows that Israel can't survive alone. That in fact, its alliances are indispensable for Israel to be able to continue. That the support and goodwill of the United States has saved Israel in the past. And other countries as well, we forget, in the 50s, the support and goodwill of the country of France was indispensable to Israel. Let us not forget that, in fact, a lot of countries had to wish Israel well in 1948 to vote for its creation in the United Nations, even if later they weren't as friendly as they were earlier. But the point is, in today's world, it is not possible to be Maccabees. You can't say Israel will go it alone and will be okay. Because there is no country, our own included, even though our own comes closest to being an exception, that can go it alone and be okay. If that were true, we wouldn't owe lots and lots and lots of money to other countries. We are interdependent between Hanukkah and Purim. And so on the one hand, Israel cannot say, you know what, we don't like this agreement. We're going to remove ourselves from all the alliances that have anything to do with it. and on the other hand cannot say we're willing to put the security of our people and our nation in the hands of others, because after all, we trust that other people will see our best interests the way we do. That's how it looks from the perspective of Jewish history. And it is not a comfortable place to be when you have a threat that is as serious and almost as imminent as the threat of a hostile power close to your border with a nuclear weapon. Not even that tomorrow, if God forbid, Iran had a nuclear weapon, they would launch it at Tel Aviv. But it shifts the balance of power tremendously, especially when you are the supplier of terrorist organizations. And if you doubt that a nuclear weapon changes the balance of power, then I ask you only to think about North Korea, which is as close to a slave state as exists in the world, but the world can do very little about it because North Korea is a slave state with a nuclear weapon. At least, and I say this with hope, at least at the moment, North Korea is not exporting its slavery to other nations. But I don't think we could say the same if Iran was similarly situated. So what do we do? And I don't want to leave you with just, we're caught in this dilemma. There is actually something that we can do that really matters. Because I want to remind you how the Maccabean rule ended. We all celebrate Hanukkah, but do you remember why aren't the Maccabees still in power? This is what happened. They fought among themselves. And the fighting got so bad that at a certain point, they invited Rome in to settle the dispute, and the Romans never left. In other words, the Maccabees themselves couldn't agree on what should be done, and as a result, they lost what we celebrate today. So here's what I want to encourage the Jewish world to do. This agreement is in place. You're not going to change it. You're not going to revoke it. You may like it. You may hate it. But you're not going to change it. But it's not in place forever. It's in place for 6 months. And at the end of 6 months, the world is supposed to determine whether it is in fact bearing fruit or being evaded. Every Jew should be on the watchtower. We should not let the pressure up on the world to watch this for the next 6 months, and especially in 6 months, because this is an existential question. This question will determine Hanukkah or Purim. This is what matters right now. I have no idea. I can't know. I can make guesses, but I can't know whether in 6 months people will say, oh my God, this really worked, or it's not working. The one thing we have to be careful of is making sure that if it's not working, the world doesn't say it really worked. Because the temptation will be great, because the alternative is terrifying. But we have to remember who we are and where we've come from and what our agenda is. And we have to pay attention. We have to hold, as it were, the world's collective feet to the fire and make sure that this doesn't become an excuse for allowing a dangerous regime to get its way. I say this because it doesn't matter if you're on the left, the right, or the center. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you think this agreement was the best thing that ever happened or a terrible tragedy. It doesn't matter. It's there, and in 6 months is when the world is supposed to make a decision. So pay attention and encourage others to pay attention and be prepared to raise your voice if the worst happens, which is that the agreement provides cover for what is right now probably the most dangerous situation in the world. That we can do. That we should do. That's what Hanukkah is supposed to mean. Lo b'chayil v'lo b'koach ki im bruchi, Amar Adonai Tzvaot. That's the motto of Hanukkah. Not by might and not by power, but by my spirit, says God. None of us are going to take up arms. We're not going to launch rockets and we're not going to fly planes. But that spirit that animates us can make a difference. So don't forget that this is the Jewish people's number one job right now. To make sure that the world pays attention. To make sure that if, God forbid, it doesn't work, that Israel has the support of the Jewish people, not just some, but the Jewish people, to ensure that it remains safe. It's going to take an enormous amount of concentration and effort and chutzpah and guts. But just imagine what it took for the Maccabees to fight the greatest power in the world and win. Bayamim ha'hem, bazman hazeh. At that time, and in this moment, in some ways the dilemmas for the Jewish people don't change. If our resolve and our faith doesn't change either, then in the end, God willing, we and our sisters and brothers in Israel will be okay. Shabbat Shalom.